Kathy Dawes now, along with Raleigh County Police Captain Tim Hegarty. And we do want to remind folks, phone lines are open, 537-1350, toll-free 866-776-1350. And you can tweet us at 1350KMAN. Not that we timed it this way, but couldn't be better timing with Captain Hegarty actually in charge of that investigation, looking into trying to find Stephen Harris, and then also Cora Brown missing as a missing person report filed on her a little bit earlier in the week. So you've been a busy guy this last week, Tim.
Well, I need to clarify.
The investigation of the murder case.
Yes. What in charge means. In charge means basically sitting around watching detectives do the hard work. Okay, so I want to make that perfectly clear. The work that they did, policing has advanced in a lot of areas, but cases like this are still solved the same way as they were 100 years ago, and that's through hard work. And I saw firsthand an incredible amount of hard work by lots of members of the Raleigh County Police Department, not just detectives, but police officers. We even had some help from our dispatchers that significantly contributed to the case. And, of course, the public. As usually is the case, information that we received from them was critical in bringing this thing to a conclusion. So I want to thank all the people that did provide us with information, that did cooperate, that did step up to speak to us.
Now, while you say, just like in the olden days, much of it is just that good old hard work, although I would venture to say that with social media these days and technology, with photos that you're able to get out almost immediately of the vehicle that's involved, I know there was a little bit of confusion on that in the beginning, and those kind of things happen as you're trying to piece together everything.
Yes.
And even Cora Brown and her connection or possible connection, all of that just hits social media so rapidly now. Does that make your job difficult?
It does. It's hard to keep up with all of that. Certainly there's sometimes a temptation to respond to everything that comes out, and when we can't. And there are times when I think it's time for police agencies in general to dial back from the social media. I mean, we try to reach the audience. We try to make ourselves transparent. We try to make ourselves relevant with the technology. But there simply are times when we have to say as little as possible. And I know people don't understand that. That's just the way that it has to be.
Well, let's recap real quickly. I know we've been talking about it all morning, but I don't want to make the assumption that people have been listening to us since 6 a.m. And even last night we had word that, of course, Stephen Harris and Cora Brown have been located in Wichita. But let's go through that and maybe what transpired a little bit when they were apprehended there in Wichita. Tim?
Well, the Wichita Police Department received information late last night that Wright and Brown were at a hotel on Kellogg, East Kellogg, I believe, yes. Motel mm-hmm. 6. They confirmed that information, and their tactical team responded, and when they were able to make contact with Mr. Harris, he gave himself up, as did his partner, Ms. Brown, without incident, which is a good thing. We always hope for that kind of outcome. And so Mr. Harris was arrested on a warrant for homicide, an attempted homicide bond, $2 million. And Cora Brown was arrested on a warrant, Raleigh County District Court warrant, for possession of methamphetamine with a $20,000 bond. We anticipate that they may be transferred to the Raleigh County Jail as soon as today.
And I know, of course, there was a lot of speculation, too, about the relationship with Cora Brown and Stephen Harris. And I don't know if we still know that yet. I know the relationships with the victims and suspect also kind of unknown at this time yet. I mean, it's not being announced, at least.
No, well, we can say that as far as the latter is concerned, that that the victim and the suspect were acquainted with each other. Beyond that, the exact nature of their acquaintance is going to be part of the investigation. We can say that our current information suggests that Cora Brown was not in danger from Harris. Again, I say our current information suggests that. Things may change as we continue to investigate, and the case is by no means over. The arrest is simply the next step in a series of steps.
And it's always a kind of a fluid thing. I mean, as I mentioned, the vehicle discrepancy a little bit earlier, then, and of course, then you had a pretty clear indication what the vehicle might be, got that right out, and that information is, of course, what helped you.
Mm-hmm.
You solve this and get place them in the Wichita area.
Well, there's always, especially early on in a homicide investigation, the fog of, you know, you've heard of the fog of war. You get hit with so much from all directions, and you're trying as quickly as possible to identify. In this case, we had not identified the suspect, and everybody or most people are aware of the term the first 48, that you need to identify a suspect in the first 48 hours or your chances of doing that are greatly diminished. And I believe we had him identified within the first 8, thanks to the work of our detective. So I'm very pleased about that. Would like to have had him in custody much sooner. That's just the way it goes. The point is now he is in custody and he's no longer a danger to anybody.
Now, I am curious, too. I know we continue to wonder about the other victim that's, I guess, in critical condition at Stormont Vale in Topeka. We haven't really gotten an update other than to say that he was taken there, no name or anything like that. When will we be able to get more information on that individual?
Well, he was transported with non-life-threatening injuries, and he has been released. We anticipate that his information will be made public early next week, probably to coincide with the first appearance of Mr. Harris.
Just curious. I mean, that's a little bit unusual. Usually the victims, we do get the names a little bit sooner, but I guess, once again, there's a reason for that.
Yes, there is a reason, and you know, not everybody agrees with those reasons, and it varies from agency to agency. But in a case where you know, you want to make sure that the prosecution is a successful one, you try to be really careful not to release any information that may jeopardize the case in any way. And as I said earlier, the public doesn't often understand or agree with some of the things that we do as far as the release of information. But as is the case, no matter what you do, someone is not going to like it.
Darned if you do, darned if you don't.
Yeah, I was actually going to say it a little bit stronger, but you're right.
Okay. Well, anything else to add? I mean, I know as we've gone over some of these different things, and, you know, the social media can be a blessing or a curse, because I do think the ability to get that information out with the pictures and the photos, at least people knew what they were looking for a little bit.
That's the blessing side of it. The curse side of it is once something is out, it's out, and it's out everywhere. And it can be factual or it can be inaccurate. So in this case, I'm not aware of anything that was hugely inaccurate, but, you know, I'm a fan of it when it is to our advantage, and obviously I'm not crazy about it when it's to our disadvantage, and goes back to that darned if you do, darned if you don't.
I know we received several calls here, too, and I'm sure you had multiple calls and pressure and that kind of thing whenever you have something of this nature. And a lot of people were nervous in town, let's face it. I know a lot of including me, I was locking my door more often than I would, both my vehicle and my home, that kind of thing. But it becomes difficult, I think, sometimes to sort through. You know, like, for example, we were curious about where he might be located, and I know that we got the feeling that it was still kind of local, but yet nationwide, which I think is protocol in a case
right.
like this.
Well, every indication that we received, you know, within 24 hours of the investigation was that he was no longer in the area. But you can never say he is no longer in the area, because you could be wrong. So that's why you're very careful about what you say. And the precautions that you talked about taking are precautions people should take all the time. And before we went on air, we talked about Manhattan and how safe it is. And it is safe, a safe community. But bad things do happen. So people should always take the kind of precautions that you talked about, regardless of whether there's a homicide suspect on the loose or not. It's just common sense, and it's a way for not to be victimized.
And, you know, it is difficult, too, because as much as you try to get the word out, warning people to be careful, I was driving to work at 5 a.m., as I always do on Monday morning, and I come, you know, Barnes Road and on down Casement, which is pretty darn close to where you had that search on Fry Drive.
Right.
And I saw a woman out running, you know, and I just, of course, I mean, I'm sure she was not aware of what was going on. That does happen, but it makes you a little bit nervous. You try to do the best you can to let people know, but still you'll have those that won't hear it.
Well, and I'll say this. There is no neighborhood in Manhattan that I don't think it's safe to run at 5 o'clock in the morning or 11 o'clock at night, generally speaking. Vehicle traffic is the thing you have to be concerned about most. But it's like saying he's no longer in the area. Yes, generally it's safe, and there are really no bad neighborhoods in Manhattan. But occasionally, stuff still happens. A couple of years ago, we did have a rape of a woman on the Hudson Trail. And fortunately, we were able to arrest that suspect. But these things do happen. So there's... am I certain that someone running at 5 o'clock in the morning in any part of town is not going to be victimized? No, but I don't think one should be afraid of that either.
And I know we tried to recount the history of the last time we had a homicide of this nature. I mean, we've had some deaths, as you mentioned, of children, which I think we've reported on too, shaken baby syndrome or
whatever the case may be. Those are still homicides.
And they're pending.
But
yeah.
the last traditional homicide, and I was talking about that this morning with some people, and I didn't have a chance to look it up, but it may have been 2014 or 2015, which is a very good thing for Manhattan and Raleigh County.
I know Dave Lewis and I sit in here every day and read stories from all over the state. It seems like lately, almost on a daily basis, there's something in Kansas City, Wichita, Topeka, mm-hmm. you name it. So I guess we ought to count ourselves as fortunate that it doesn't happen more often, knock on wood there.
But still be vigilant and take nothing for granted, as we don't as an agency. Because we don't have certain problems that some communities have, that doesn't mean we're not going to continue to try to do everything we can to prevent those problems.
Let's go ahead and take a break. It is now 9:30, and we do want to, again, remind folks we'll only have Captain Hegarty on for another segment today. If you do have questions or comments of your own, 537-1350, Captain Tim Hegarty, Raleigh County Police Department.